You're listening to The Infected.
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 And you are listening to The Infected.
Hi there, and welcome to The Infected, your own personal and trusted corner in cyberspace, where we discuss and play music with a dark lining, both old and new. Jeroen and I are back again, broadcasting from our crypt, far away from COVID-19, but we have been infected. With the musical virus, that is. And we will spread that infection with you during the next hour or so. We've dusted off great tracks again, records ranging from the 80s all the way up to 2020, covering multiple genres, from experimental synth stuff to recent shoegaze. And of course, we will uncover the solution to last week's 8-bit minute and offer a new challenge for you at the end of this podcast. So for now, sit back, have a sip of your glass of wine or beverage of choice, and enjoy the ride. We will tee off with Cabaret Voltaire and the wonderful gloomy track Invocation from 1988. We'll be right back.
Cabaret Voltaire. Man, I love this track. It made me feel like it's 4 a.m. and you're at a party at someone's house and you found a bedroom and you've lied down and you hear these voices from the other rooms. You're just lying down and spacing out, and this is sort of the atmosphere that they bring, and it's really taken me away. Awesome track, man. Very nice find.
It's nice, isn't it? It's like a dragging song with you feel with one step on Earth and one step in another dimension, maybe. I can relate.
Yeah.
So Cabaret Voltaire is a legendary band that you and most listeners will know, or at least they will ring a bell somewhere. You've probably heard of them because they've done a lot of music over the years. But before we dive into the band, a quick and fun fact about the band name. Because during the First World War, Switzerland was a neutral country. And among the many refugees coming to Zurich, there were a lot of artists from all over Europe. And Cabaret Voltaire was the name of an artistic nightclub in 1916 in Zurich, where these artists came together and performed musical or literary work. And back to the band. By the early 1970s, a man called Chris Watson from Sheffield, England, began experimenting with electronic devices to make music without musical instruments. Inspired by the tech geekery of Brian Eno and his job as a telephone engineer, Watson began experimenting with tape loops and started making his own synthesizer components that he obtained by mail order. Because the thing was, synthesizers were really big and expensive, you know, those walls of modular synthesizers, Jeroen, with patch cables, and it just, you could buy a big house for the same amount that you could buy a synthesizer back in those days.
Yeah.
And anyway, there was a magazine that people could order synthesizer components with that magazine and solder them into a synthesizer. Quite cool. Andy McCluskey from OMD and many other bands also did this. It was a cheap way to build your own synthesizer. And before Cabaret Voltaire, there were basically big pop supergroups. Prog rock was big at that time, with some psychedelic synth breaks in between. At a certain stage, Kraftwerk came along in the early 70s. Also, the soundtrack to A Clockwork Orange. It's just electronic, and no other instruments, just electronic. Then you had science fiction films like Doctor Who and books by J.G. Ballard. You're familiar with him.
Yeah.
Big inspiration for a lot of great bands. And also there was rioting going on in England. And anyway, Chris Watson was inspired by the mix of all this, started making his own music, and then formed the band. Cabaret Voltaire were basically interested in creating new and innovative sounds, very non-conformist approach, almost a punk approach to making electronic music. The thing is, they did a lot of stuff that I can really not really relate to. It hasn't aged well, very experimental.
Yeah.
But since 1982, they decided to turn into a more commercial direction. And this song we just heard is from 1988. Great track, but totally different from what they started out from.
Yeah, it's a great band, Cabaret Voltaire. I like the artsy stuff that they did in the beginning. Also fine with the more commercial stuff from later on, but it's a staple of New Wave.
True, true. And there's a interesting documentary on YouTube that's also featuring Cabaret Voltaire and all the other great British bands of that era. We can maybe link it on the website or in the show notes. It's an hour and a half of all the history from Joy Division to Cabaret Voltaire to OMD, Ultravox, all of them.
Yeah, what I like, you already mentioned J.G. Ballard, who was really an inspirational writer for a lot of the artists in this generation. In this documentary, they also explain the link that there is between people that love synthesizers and people that like science fiction, because that's what it felt like at the time, you know, in the late 70s and early 80s.
Yes.
The synthesizer and this type of music, it felt like the voice of the future.
Very much so.
Right?
Yep.
So, logical combination there. Yeah, Cabaret Voltaire, love them. Because this was a nice way to ease people into the dark bath of music that we have prepared for them.
Yep.
But
a bit of mood setting. But let's continue indeed, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's turn it up a notch.
Nice.
So we're going to play Soft Kill for you. And now, I know we've played Soft Kill before on the show. Gov actually introduced them. You may remember the story of frontman Tobias Grave, who has not had the happiest life. He struggled through several drug addictions, was imprisoned several times, and almost lost his son Dominic in childbirth. And sadness often goes hand in hand with beauty for artists, as previous Soft Kill albums show. Grave, however, got back on track, managed to make a record while clean for the first time in his life, and now can see his son growing up as a healthy child. So this new record is called Dead Kids, Rip City, which really is a parody of Kendrick Lamar's Good Kid, Mad City. So this has crystal clear production and some good song material. On the album, Grave sings about the stories of people who didn't fare so well, the Dead Kids, in a city, Portland, from which he is becoming more and more estranged, Rip City. As Graves explains it, the theme is songs about people we miss so much, buried under suffering that we still see every day on our way through this troubled city. This is something of a controversial album, and many diehard fans have spoken out against this album, which is from 2020, because they prefer the darker earlier work. Me? I'm happy for Tobias, and I love this track, Wanting War.
Spent today watching
So Jeroen, all those criticasters online and album reviews, they say the same thing. Softkill doesn't sound that dark anymore, they've changed, but really, if you listen to this, they're still operating within the realm that we love. The mood is great, production value is high, and if you keep doing the same thing over and over and over, you cease to exist at a certain point. You have to follow new directions and change it up a little bit sometimes. Maybe people can't deal with change or something. I can't really relate to those comments because I really love this track, and Softkill, with almost every song that they've put out, takes me to a deeper place. I don't know.
I totally understand what you're saying. The song resonates with me as well. I like the entire album. It's almost as if sometimes you get the feeling that people actually are sort of sad that the artist isn't miserable anymore, because they somehow need the artist to be miserable. I don't know. I'm just really happy for Tobias. The production value is absolutely great. It sounds phenomenal in a good stereo. It's amazing. I also like the layers of the different instruments, which are more open versus what the way they played before. The guitar takes a back foot halfway during the track for quite a number of bars. The bass guitar is leading a significant portion of the track.
Mm-hmm.
But it all fits together, and they leave space for each other when they're playing. I love the song, and I really like the album. So whatever you've read online or offline, the new album by Softkill from 2020, Dead Kids, R.I.P. City, is definitely worth a listen to.
Highly recommended, and form your own opinion.
That's it.
Right? Don't listen to what everybody's saying. I brought something else to the table today from 2020. So we're heavy into the 80s and sometimes 70s, but also covering recent stuff. And this episode may be a great example of that. So I'm talking about the band BDRMM. And I believe you spell it as bedroom. I also read some interviews with the guys, and they say the band name is spelled as bedroom. Anyway, it's a band that was put on my radar by a colleague of mine, Leon. He's a big music fan with great taste and also a loyal listener of The Infected. And Bedroom is a five-piece guitar-driven band founded by a guy called Ryan Smith. And they blend a 90s-inspired shoegaze style, as you will soon hear, with rich sounding and also like modern production. So it's a fresh take on a genre that I really love. And in 2016, after a 12-hour shift at the local pub, Ryan was sitting in his bedroom. Bedroom, here we go again, bedroom reference. After listening to some music, he decided to get out his GarageBand app on his iPhone and also a cable interface that you can record stuff with on your iPhone, and he wrote a demo called Everything. And Ryan was so proud of the result, he sent it to the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, because they had a competition where young bands and acts can have a chance to have their music played on live radio. And Ryan was selected, and the demo was aired on BBC One. And at that moment, of course, Ryan knew he needed to start a band and get a couple of guys together. So we're gonna check out the song Happy. But first, Leon, dear colleague, take it away.
Hey guys, I'm Leon, a listener and fan of the show. I absolutely love your passion for music. Your podcast is often consumed while running for longer distances or when doing garden chores. I personally love the drag and repetitive character in music, the shoegazing. It brings me in a trance-like status. Bands within my scope are Isis, Pelican, TV on the Radio, Tool, Failure, and Porcupine Tree. I've been treated well by The Infected over the last year, and you guys have both entertained as educated me over time. That being said, I'd love to put a dime in a musical pocket and introduce you to the UK-based band BDRMM and their debut album Bedroom. It's doomy, David Lynchy, it has great hypnotic riffs, and it brings me to exactly that spot that I love music driving me. The songs feel like they can last for an eternity, whilst in reality, they're refreshingly short. Gents, listeners, I'd gladly present to you Happy from BDRMM. Thank you.
Yeah, this song had me close my eyes and just it took me away, man.
It does, doesn't it? But it also, like Leon mentioned, they sound longer than they actually are, these songs. Time flies, but at the same time, maybe that's the shoegaze effect or the drifting away effect. I'm not sure, but they seem longer.
I agree, yeah. It sounds friendly in a way, right? It has a drive, but there's no aggression there. It's very open and very, very nice sounding. And then it starts building up quite slowly, but surely, You know, layer upon layers being added in a subtle way until you enter this sort of soundscape of all kinds of swirling echoes and guitar riffs. And I don't like the drummer that much. He tends to have very, very busy fills and breaks. But apart from that, I love this track. And it's very, very nice.
I should listen to those drums again. Didn't really pick that up. But I agree, the production value, if you listen to like old Jesus and Mary Chain, like the vacuum sound, it's like the vacuum's going on in the back. Your wife or yourself are doing the vacuuming. It's a terrible sound quality. But this is so balanced. And at the same time, you have that shoegaze power.
Yeah.
Very well done, I think.
Yeah, I love it.
Good to hear.
Is this a new band? Bedroom?
It is. It's a new band. They started in 2016. I believe this is only their second or first serious album. And also the other tracks, they're more introspective. So Happy is the most powerful one. There are also some songs that are slower. Another favorite of mine is called Is That What You Wanted to Hear? Check it out. The whole album is really great.
It sounds like that's a song they made for the record company.
true.
I'm gonna check that one out as well. I like Bedroom. Definitely going into some of my playlists.
Happy to hear.
Enough with all the newfangled shit. Let's go back into our comfort zone.
Yes, let's step into the time machine. Go back.
Back to the future and let's emerge in the 80s, another time period where we feel right at home. I want to talk to you about Mick Karn.
Of course.
You know, I'm a massive fan of the band Japan, which helped shape New Wave's sound and look. Karn was the bass player, always playing the fretless sliding bass on all of Japan's albums. His sound is truly unique and instantly recognizable. A great creative artist, but with a sad personal story. His bassoon was stolen, he did not appear on the biggest hit of his own band, his girlfriend was stolen, and in the end he died in poverty of cancer at the young age of only 52.
Jeez.
Yeah. Fame isn't everything, right?
No.
So Karn was born actually as Andonis Michaelidis in Greek Cyprus. His family moved to London when he was only 3 years old. His father was a butcher. Karn had learned to play the violin and he played bassoon in the school orchestra, and so well that he was even selected for the London School Symphony Orchestra. However, after one of his few appearances there, his bassoon was stolen, and then his school refused to buy him another, and in anger at their decision, he spent £5 and bought a bass guitar instead. Karn removed the frets from his bass guitar because he wanted to be able to bend the notes like on a violin, which is how he developed his unique bass playing style.
Interesting.
Karn never actually learned to read notes. He played by ear all of his life. So at secondary school, he met two brothers called David and Steve Batt, with whom he founded Japan in 1974. He also invited his old school friend Richard Barbieri to practice with them in the room above his father's butcher shop. This band, Japan, eventually got a record deal, and in early 1978, Michaelidis and the Batt brothers chose their stage names. David Batt became David Sylvian, and Anthony Michaelidis became Mick Karn. Like other band members, eventually Karn became interested in Japanese art and culture. He got into a relationship with the Japanese photographer Yuka Fuji. Now, Japan were ahead of their time and never really very successful until 1981, when they finally had a hit album with Tin Drum and a hit single with Ghosts, which we played earlier on the show. However, Karn was not on that track, got no writing credits, and did not share in any of the success of that single. And to add insult to injury, Karn's girlfriend, Yuka Fuji, moved in with singer David Sylvian.
Can you... Oh, man. I'm really feeling for this guy. It really hurts. Listening to this story hurts. It's... Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, continue. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No worries. So Japan fell apart, the individual members forging ahead with separate projects. Now, in 1982, Karn played bass in the first Prince's Trust concert for Charles and Diana. Pete Townshend picked Carn personally and explained to the press that Mick Carn was by far the best bassist in all of the UK and so the obvious choice for the band. After doing some work with other artists like Gary Newman, Midge Ure and Kate Bush, among others, in 1984, the Dali Scar project came to life. A Dali Scar was a cooperation with Bauhaus singer Peter Murphy. The band Bauhaus, like Japan, had blown up. Murphy and Carn never actually went to the studio together, preferring to send tapes back and forth, and so eventually they released the album The Waking Hour. On The Waking Hour by Dali Scar, all instrumentation is written and played by Mick. It's an experiment in stripping music down to its bare minimum while retaining a strong mood and a Middle Eastern flavor. It would remain the only Dali Scar album for a long time. Mick would keep making music, but would never again enjoy great commercial success. In 2010, Mick was diagnosed with the advanced stages of cancer. He moved back to London from Cyprus, where it was hoped that he would begin treatment. Just before the move, Mick was contacted by Peter Murphy, hoping that they could create a new Dali Scar recording together. Mick enthusiastically agreed and work began right away. The duo was reunited in a studio in Oxford and in late 2010, five tracks were completed over the ensuing months. A slow process due to Mick's declining health. Mick could not afford the hospital bills and a crowdsourcing campaign was set up to cover his medical costs. Sadly, in the middle of the recordings, Mick lost his fight against cancer and passed away peacefully, surrounded by family and close friends, in January 2011. Aged only 52. The Dali Scar EP, In Glad Aloneless, was released in April 2012 on the birthday of Mick's son. There is one song, Artemis, that appears on both Dali Scar albums. The 2012 version is called Artemis Rise. This version has more orchestration and also vocals. Now what I've done is I've made a mix for you to hear both the 1984 and the 2011 versions entangled.
You are too kind.
Yeah, so this way you can get the feel for both versions of the track, all rolled into one.
Mm-hmm.
So here it is. This is my remix of Dali Scar. I've called the remix Artemis Rise and Fall. I'm
Just one album, Jeroen. I knew this track, Artemis. Found out about it maybe 10 years ago or something. Totally forgot about it. But it's really arty, interesting stuff. Arty doesn't always go hand in hand with good music. But
no,
you got the steadiness of the rhythm. And then that shifting bass or that fretless bass. And some synth stabs in the back. It's keeps me on board. I don't know. It's very special music. And I didn't know they, or at least before he died, they got back together to do another couple of tracks on it, honestly, because I also did some reading, of course, in preparation of our podcast, and I found out that the two weren't always best of friends, and they clashed a lot of times. So that's also maybe a reason why they just did that one album. But thanks for reviving this piece of lost music.
Yeah, it's great. This guy has this completely personal and unique style of playing that you recognize instantly and immediately whenever he contributes to any sort of music. And there's not many instrumentalists who have that going for them.
No, definitely. And also that bass, it also has a kind of synthesizer feel to it, but it's just a bass guitar.
Yeah, it's a bass guitar.
Yeah.
With no frets.
Yeah. Yeah. Also feels a bit synthetic, but that's maybe due to the fact that the rest of the track is also quite synthesized. Interesting stuff. And this album is also on Spotify, I found out to my big surprise.
Yes, The Waking Hour.
Nice present for us all.
I really recommend it, not only for bass players, but for everybody who is into a more experimental 80s music, or into Japan, or into, you know, any of that sort of stuff, or Bauhaus.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting project.
A nice mix, by the way, Jeroen. The transition was really spot on, so my compliments.
Yeah, and I also hate the ending of the version on the newer album, because I think it's a bit too much. Mm. So I just faded in the later song in the middle and faded it out again and let it end with the original.
Yeah.
So that was what was happening there.
Which one do you like best? I'll go with the old one.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But I think it's nice to have the little extra layer there so you can hear them both, right?
Yes, absolutely. And then we can land with the old one again in the end.
Yep.
Well done, yep, my friend. Yep. So this band kind of made me think a little bit about the royal family and the poor. The next band we're featuring right now, we'll listen to the track in a bit, but it also has a steady rhythm section and bass that's all over the place, and some other interesting instruments that you will hear. So also the recent interview with Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, yes.
Say what?
Made me think about the royal family.
Oh, right.
And the poor. know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, this band is maybe the most misunderstood and unknown band to record for Factory Records. You know Joy Division and all the other greats, but this band was also on the label. And the royal family and the poor remain a bit of a mystery for many to this day. They released four albums in two decades, rarely performing live after 1984. And the band name also lets you believe that there are more band members working here, but it was mainly just one guy, and his name is Mike Keen. The first album, The Temple of the 13th Tribe, kind of an obscure name, was received poorly and with a lot of criticism. Journalists thought they were a joke and their music was inaccessible and pretentious. And in all honesty, Jeroen, if you listen to that earlier stuff, I can confirm there was a lot of, well, bullshit, in my opinion. And the album definitely didn't age well, but there was a second album called We Love the Moon, which is really great. And Mike Keen, he invited some other musicians to join him, also fired some of them during the making of the album.
Always a good sign, always a good sign, yeah.
Yes. Mike sounds like an enfant terrible by now, right?
Yep.
The second album didn't get much attention, maybe because of the first one that totally flopped. And at the time of its release, the relationship between Mike and the boss of Factory Records, Tony Wilson, turned sour quite quickly. Not only because of poor album sales, Tony really didn't match with Mike, and Tony was not willing to finance any new equipment or invest in the band any further. And I found out that Mike Keen borrowed money privately to finance his home studio. Well, didn't amount to much. And he also didn't really record any new material that was put out. In fact, it led to his personal bankruptcy. Most of his equipment got seized by bailiffs. Unsurprisingly, Mike gave up on music, and the royal family and the poor again fell silent.
Oh, man.
But let's revive them for the next 5 minutes with a wonderfully doomy track called Heartbeat, a very fitting track name, as you will soon hear. This is it. Heartbeat.
They swept and sailed away over on the right. They completely ran through the police cordon. They swarmed across the road. It's quite hopeless for police protecting it. And there are the orders, and there is Her Royal Highness about to enter the coach. And again, we shall hear, I think, the national anthem.
Oh,
So the thing is, Jeroen, I've been looking for this track because I heard it once on a digital radio station, but I've been looking for a track, Pagan Ways. Pagan Ways. I didn't find out until maybe a year ago that it was the royal family and the poor, and the song was not called Pagan Ways but Heartbeat. That's what you do when you're trying to unearth classics or tracks that you really love. It's not always easy to find them if you don't have the track names and everything.
No, but it must have been great to feel, you know, when you finally found it. It must have been exciting.
Yes. Happy as a kid receiving a new present, if you can describe it like that. So that it starts off with a nice sample about the royal family in the UK, of course. And it soon spirals off into a kind of occult pagan mess. But that whole mood is something that I just really love.
So I was quickly checking this out on Spotify because I liked it and I wanted to drag it into a playlist. And I saw that the album was listed as being from 2004. Is that right, or is that the CD issue?
That's probably the CD issue, because this one was released in, I believe, 86 or something.
Oh, wow.
The second album.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is probably a compilation of older singles that they put out in 2004. I'm not sure if it's remastered, could be. But it's from the mid-80s.
Yeah, so We Love the Moon is what it's listed as, mm-hmm. the album here. But that's
probably a remaster or something.
It's a collection of things. Okay, yeah. I see. I also got a sense of, do you know The Orb?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that sort of feels related to Adventures in the Ultra World or whatever. What's that called? Adventures Beyond the Ultra World is what the album is called, I think.
I'm familiar with that one. I understand what you're saying. And by the way, the electronic or more kind of house music part, because The Orb is what they cannot be fitted into one label, but it's like ambient, ranging to house music or something.
Ranging to reggae, ranging to completely out there.
Maybe we can should keep them in mind, The Orb, for later.
Yeah. We're going to try and see if we can find an Orb track that is worthy of The Infection.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but no, really, I liked it. And I totally understand why the Mick Garn bass playing was a link with this track. Because even though the style is different, the sort of atmosphere is quite similar, actually. It's almost eerie. Yeah,
it's similar, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Got that same vibe, man.
It's a good set.
I must say, after these introspective, mesmerizing tracks, I'm looking for some action, some energy. You have something?
Oh man, I can deliver. Yeah.
I was hoping.
I have just the Insta Outcast for you.
Insta Outcast.
Let me tell you about a band I came across on Instagram only very recently. And this band, I'm not sure what to label them as. Dark wave, synth wave, cold gaze, minimal wave. I don't care really. It may be hard to box in, but man, do I love their ethereal brooding sound. So, Terraforms is a duo from Maine, USA. It consists of the haunting, delicate voice of Paris and the disorienting grand synth work of Ryan. Together, they are both an elegant and a violent force, working to create sinister, memorizing melodies. Soaring, atmospheric and malevolent, they capture a sound that I really, really enjoy. By the way, I also loved Brendan Carpenter's video clip for this track. In black and white with an estranged aesthetic, it's modern and edgy, their synth setup subtly referencing the crucifix, pulsing in tandem with the driving soundtrack. You just have to see it, it's great. I was briefly in touch with them, and they're awesome, really nice folks. Ryan is so modest that he declined the offer to introduce their latest single, Opaque. But luckily, singer Paris found it in her heart to introduce this excellent track to our listeners.
Nice.
Take it away, Paris.
Hi, this is Terraforms. You're listening to The Infected. Enjoy our new track, Opaque.
Great stuff, Jeroen. I was hoping to end this week's episode with some really more like recent energetic music. Kind of made me think about Chromatics that we covered last time. Female vocals, great synth work, moody. You can also almost imagine them on the stage of an ending episode of Twin Peaks or something, right? In the Roadhouse.
Yeah.
Quality stuff. Never heard of them, but...
I like it. It's the track actually doesn't have a very high tempo, but there's a really steady sort of driving force in it that really I like. It's very atmospheric. Love the vocals, obviously. Yeah, it's a band I'm going to follow because Terraforms, I'm sure they're going to go far.
Yep, they got a lot of talent. Interesting. And thanks for doing all that research on Instagram and getting in touch. And also thank you guys for this personal introduction to your wonderful song.
Always adds the extra touch, doesn't it? Yeah.
It does. It does.
All season, we offer a unique competition. Hang on for a few more minutes to enter it and have a chance to win prizes. Not just for regulars, but also for first-time listeners. Hi there, folks. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. To never miss another episode, subscribe to this podcast. Just visit our site at theinfected.nl. One click is all it takes. So, do you want to discover some new acts and tracks? On the site, theinfected.nl, you'll also find a Spotify playlist with all the songs we've ever played on the show. Plus, you will find the show notes of each episode there with all the stories, pictures, videos and links. And a shop with cool merchandise. Use the code INFECTME for free shipping. The address to go to is theinfected.nl. So now, without further ado, on to the competition. This whole season, we end each show with an 8-bit minute. And maybe, Gov, you can reveal what last week's 8-bit minute was.
Of course I can. It was Hurt by both Johnny Cash or Nine Inch Nails, both great versions, but the song was Hurt.
That's right. So here we go. On to this week's 8-bit minute.
8-bit minute.
If you can recognize the artist and track, send us a message. At the end of the season, the listener with the most right answers wins a luxury back-printed The Infected t-shirt.
Nice.
But there's a chance to win for everyone. We'll send another surprise item from our store to a random participant at the end of the season. So even if you play only once, you already have a chance to win. See if you can recognize this week's 8-bit track and let us know via our Facebook, website or Instagram at TheInfectedNL. Here it is!
Stay strange.